And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
On today's episode of the Glue Guys, we are going to review Game 1 Nets Celtics titled The Beatdown. I have a bit called Proud Dad, Sad Dad.
Great.
About the game. And we'll talk about, you know, how that leads forward into Game 2. And a delicious quote by Billy King that we will definitely talk about by the end of the show. Welcome back to the Glue Guys. This is Mike here. Say hello, Brian. Check us out on Twitter at BKGlueGuys, NetsDaily.com, The Athletic. Get yourself directly behind that paywall. $1 a month for the first 6 months that you have the subscription. TheAthletic.com/GlueGuys. Brian.
Michael.
The Nets are back.
I can relate a little bit now to the Nets based on I had a bad start just then. I had it. My intro was a little off. I had a bad start.
Yeah. You're the Nets 3-point shooting in game one. Yeah. Your voice was that.
Yeah.
I think it's so there's a decision podcasters have to make. Every podcaster who follows a team that is in the NBA playoffs has to make this decision. How soon do you pod after that first game?
That's right.
Do you do an immediate post-game show, or do you kind of give it a little breath, a little time to breathe?
You wouldn't think about it. Mike and I were up all night Saturday night thinking about what the optimal time is. How to decant this episode, you know, how to let it breathe.
And we decided to decant it. We've been up since that game. We haven't slept. We've just been waiting for the moment, and this felt like the perfect moment, recording at 3:32 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Monday, May 24th, to talk about Nets-Celtics Game 1. And I think it was important to wait because, and I tweeted this out after the game, the early emotion of the game, the things that we saw at the beginning of the game, the Celtics hitting big shots, the Nets sort of shaky, a lot of like one-man basketball on offense. It felt like during the game, the Nets weren't maximizing and the Celtics looked more, I don't know, more competitive than they should have been. But of course, then the Nets go on and they have a really great stretch in the second half and they win by 11 points and we feel pretty good. As I've gone further away from the game, I feel better and better about what I witnessed in game one. Better and better.
Wow.
Go, all the data
walk me through your journey, start to finish. I want the hero's journey.
I was legit worried in game one. The Celtics were playing an inspired bit of spirited basketball.
Okay.
And, you know, but then the second half happened and Kevin Durant started to guard Jason Tatum and James Harden got a little bit more assertive and Kyrie Irving kept doing Kyrie Irving things. And the Nets firmly it felt more actually like a regular season game in the second half. And I mean that as a compliment.
Yeah.
In terms of that, the Nets were still able to sort of flip the switch in that time and then just extinguish the Celtics' chances of coming back. How did you consume the game, Brian?
I was live at Tailgate. Shout out to Tailgate Brooklyn, which was a fun time. I think we're going to do more live ones, probably at a different place closer to the Barclays Center, just for everyone's sake.
Just on the escalator. People are just going to be going around with the escalator. Taking shots every time you get up and down.
I might just, you know, haul out a cathode ray TV and just set it up outside Barclays, you know, sit Indian style. Sorry.
I would love
crisscross applesauce. I meant to say crisscross applesauce.
The great people at Sony are listening.
Yeah.
I think they own the property that is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Mm-hmm. marketing idea, and I would love to be a part of this. A pop-up, we get an abandoned subway car, and we make it up like what Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like their home look like. That's always been the ideal home for me. You know, I watch a lot of HGTV, and I've never really seen the
there's no show that replicates subway cars.
Yeah.
Well, it was a whole station in the, like the second and third movies, right? They have they really pimp it out.
I mean, they got more money, they had more endorsements by that point, and kind of expanded subterraneanly. But
And so you just want to put a TV in a subway car, is what you're saying?
And I want to sit with a bunch of turtles and eat pizza and watch the Nets.
But yeah, no, I think that's an idea. It was good. I'll say this: I had to watch it again because I was, you know, we had to turn up. You know, we had to. Absolutely. How am I going to tap into my primal playoff version of myself? Otherwise, you know,
Angel Dust was.
Yeah, I had to mainline some PCP and you know turn it up. Just kidding. We had some bits.
Oh, that was a joke.
But it was good. So, you know, be on the lookout for another version of that. You know, hopefully something like that happens. But I did have to watch it again because I was slightly distracted at times, though I was more tapped into the vibe, right, rather than the details. So I had to go do the detailed version. And I agree with you. After watching the detailed version back, I did feel better about what I saw the entire first half, basically. You know, just in the first quarter alone, just watching Evan Fournier take super contested, falling, drifting threes and stuff. It's just not in that microcosm of that one game wasn't sustainable. That's sort of my feeling. It was like they played as well as you possibly can play, and it was good enough to get you a 6-point lead going into halftime, and then we may never see that again. That's how I sort of feel about it.
Did you, though, feel that during the game? Like, I think there was a real sense, there's a little anxiety. Because the expectation, I mean, most people had been predicting a sweep, not just us. Mm-hmm. Pretty much everyone was predicting that the Nets were definitely going to win game one. It felt like, oh shit, is like Evan Fournier going to be this X factor that is going to flip the series? Because obviously with Jaylen Brown out, you know, the Celtics have limited options offensively. It's basically Jason Tatum. Kemba Walker was not good in game one. Kemba played pretty bad. I actually thought Peyton Pritchard was more of a problem. I don't know what he did offensively, but he felt more impactful than Kemba did. Obviously, Kemba's going to have some good games of this series. Mm-hmm. It's just going to happen. It's like he's too good of a player. But I was worried. And then the worries subsided after Kevin Durant switches on to Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
And this is going to be in Proud Dad, Sad Dad, my segment that I'm going to do later about game one, round one. That was the takeaway moment. Is Kevin Durant hobbled, rehabbing, hamstrung Kevin, the contused, the contused Kevin Durant.
It's a tussin.
Taking on Jason Tatum head on and saying, I'm going to teach you something.
Yeah.
Pull up your chair. This is playoff time.
Yeah.
JJ. And I'm going to teach you something.
Yep.
And he taught him a lesson. Yep. Biology 101.
It was pretty good. I mean, that matchup in particular, you got to be, to borrow your phrase, heartened by what you saw there. Because the way that Kevin Durant was putting up a fair bit of those numbs was just through, like, crafty slips. You know, he was just, like, doing, like, backdoor cuts and stuff. You know, just, like, just old man cleverness of the highest degree. As well as his normal repertoire of things. But, like, you know, he was having little breakout steals, stuff we haven't seen since like January, you know, that kind of stuff. So it was good to see. It's good to see him get some easy bucks.
I'm just going to break into Proud Dad, Sad Dad, and it will lead to perfect conversation. There. So I'm a father. Brian knows this. I have two sons, both under the age of 3. And
two sons and 12 daughters, my guess. 12 daughters.
But I haven't seen any of my 12 daughters.
Yeah. Yeah,
they exist out there. I don't pay attention.
The tradition of the Smelts is this is how things
we
are
cast
done.
Out our women. They are the hunter gatherers of our family. Ooh, they are out there pillaging for food while us men
get chubby, Zoom's gonna die again.
In our homes. What a weird reference. So Proud Dad, Sad Dad. There's moments as a dad that you are proud, and there's moments as a dad that you are sad for things that your kids did. So I felt game one, round one. Here are things I'm proud about, and here are things I'm sad about for the Nets. I'll start proud, Brian. I'm proud about the Nets' defense. The Nets' defense, yes. They held the Celtics to 61 points over the first, third, and fourth quarters. Kyrie, I thought, had his best game as a net defensively. I the Celtics only scored 93 points. I felt like that was the second biggest takeaway besides Kevin Durant's performance in the game. The Nets play defense. Mm. That's like, if for long term, if we're talking about being proud,
yeah,
that's one of those indicators.
I agree. And in my detailed watch back, I don't know if anyone was talking about Blake Griffin specifically, you know, playing defense, but being very switchy and handsy and, you know, all the kinds of things that we wanted to see from there. But yeah, and just in general, a handsier, playing the passing lanesier Brooklyn Nets defense, you know that word. Yes. But yes, and yeah, totally agree that, like, you know, that when the chips were down, if we were going to pull on some lever to make a change, like you don't expect them to pull the defensive lever. That's not one you often see, but you know, here we are, playoffs. That was going to be the big meme. Can you just get it? Can you just turn that defensive switch on when you need to? So far, I don't know. I think you might be able to pull a lever, Mike.
And this is my comparison point as a father. It's like, as a dad seeing your kid share a toy with another kid for the first time. You've been training them the whole time and said, you know, sharing is a big part of childhood and being a parent. You want the kid to share. You don't want the kid to be a selfish child.
Yeah.
And seeing your kid share a toy organically for the first time, amazing. It's an amazing feeling. And for the Nets, they haven't been very good on defense for most of the year. And to see them turn it up, again, 61 points over three quarters against the Celtics. The Celtics, yeah, they don't have Jaylen Brown, but I actually thought the Nets, even when the Celtics were hitting those kind of crazy shots in the first quarter, I felt like those shots were like they were being well defended.
Yeah.
The Nets players were there putting pressure on the Celtics. And if they continue to play defense like that, you know, that could be able to do it from game to game. But if they can turn it up to that level, what questions could you have?
Why not turn it on from game to game? Why do you think it's just
too hard? It's just
You do it once, you do it.
Get bored.
Do it once, you do it again.
Harden was kind of bored in the game. Yeah. If we're going to be like, he was a little bit, and he's one of my other proud moments, but like, he was a little, there wasn't full effort Harden. It wasn't like, I'm going to dominate you, James Harden. It was more big. Mm. Remember when James Harden came to the Nets? It was more of like in the flow. Mm. I'm going to manipulate the defense, but I'm not going to be all encompassing.
Yeah.
Houston Rockets.
A little differential.
James Harden.
Yeah.
Can I say a sad thing?
Is it going to be too much for me to take?
Yeah, I think it may be.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Here's sad dad. Okay. The non-big three Nets. Okay. The big three Nets scored 82 of the 104 points in game one. Joe Harris was the only non-big three Net to score in double figures, and he scored 10 points. And so, like, it's okay. If I'm going to compare it to something as a father, it's as if your kid has been potty trained for a number of months now, and then they just decide to, like, pee in the corner of a room. And you're like, come on. Come on, guys. Mm-hmm. It's not the worst thing in the world, but you also are at a point where, like, if you're going to want to continue to have more flexibility and independence in life, I'm going to need a reliable bathroom breaker. Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Can't have you peeing in the corner. And so if the Nets want to win consistently against the Bucks, the Sixers, and the Lakers, or maybe the Phoenix Suns, there has to be a role player outside the big three to step up in a big way.
I'm going to zag on you on this one, Mike.
Ooh, okay. Love it.
Because I was really happy to see just how dominant the big three were, especially with all of the, you guys haven't played enough stuff circulating out there. So I did want to lay a tone.
That's
of
a good zag.
How about
that's
that zag?
A really good zag.
How about that zag? I mean, well, it was nice to see, and we did select Joe Harris as like one of the guys we did want to see get some O up. So he did like his thing, you know, to a certain extent, but I did want to see like a big three, like what it would look like in your example against like a, you know, a Phoenix, you know, let's, you know, getting ahead of our skis here, go to the finals, right? We're just shooting the finals, you know, when those rotations truly contract and it's really about your, you know, the top, you know, half of your rotation, got to make sure that's tight. That's cohesive, that's clicking and working in all the ways. So getting at least just like one, I mean, now we can get Nick Claxton some reps and whoever else. You know, I'm happy we got that thing out of the way. But I did want to see at least one dominant version of that. So I'm zagging. I'm zagging here.
I think that's a really good point, because now the problem in the first half for me was that the team was – it was too much like, hey, Kyrie, do your thing. Hey, Kevin Durant, do your thing. And I'll jump to one of my other sad points. Sad dad, three-point shooting. This is an obvious one. The Nets shot 23.5% from three in game one. Kyrie, Harden, and KD shot a collective 5 for 24. Yeesh.
Yikes.
That's not very good. It's because a lot of those were pull-ups, just like no rhythm.
Yeah.
I think Durant had a wide open corner three at one point that I think Harden got from or whatever. But like, I think part of the problem with the offense in game one, and again, it's all fine, the Nets won, was just that there was some awkwardness. Mm. I do think that there was still some awkwardness. There wasn't the cohesion that we saw earlier in the season between Kyrie and Kevin Durant, or Harden and KD, or Harden and Kyrie. I still think it was disjointed. Though, if you're being sad, it's not that bad, because they won the game. And they will, and if anything, it's a good point, because the Nets will regress. I guess, do you regress back to — it's not a regression, it's a progression — back to if you're below your average and you're trying to go back up to your average, it's a progression. So the Nets will progress
back to the mean?
Back to the mean.
Yeah.
You wouldn't regress to the mean if you're below
your return mean. To the future type share here, Mike. You've blown my
this
mind.
This is Tenet. Yeah. We're talking about Tenet.
Yeah.
Have you seen Tenet?
I did watch Tenet.
What did you think?
I remember feeling like I wanted to leave, to stop watching it.
you wanted to walk backwards out of the room. Be like, I don't want to.
I don't know why I felt it was so — it's so long. And I like the premise of, like, a, you know, it's like a new James Bond series, and you know, there's moments in it, but I was just like, I don't know, for whatever reason, I just really want this to end. That's how I felt. That's how I felt. I don't know.
I mean, I think my viewing experience was, I had watched Kong v. Godzilla was the second to last movie. Mortal Kombat was the first to last movie. And then I watched Tenet. So like the gap in quality in terms of just story structure was massive.
Yeah.
So for me, Tenet hit.
It hit
pretty
hard.
It was
clicking.
I liked it.
I don't know. It caught me on a weird day. I might have to go back to it.
I'm sure other people have made the joke. If they could, Christopher Nolan, of course, did Tenet. If they could do a Tenet Inception crossover where we're going forwards and backwards in time while also being in dreams and incepting people, I think that would be the worst movie of all time.
Yeah, that could be bad. That would be —
I'd be so terrified. Let's do this quick break. Coming back, more proud, sad dad, first round, game one, Celtics-Nets thoughts.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And we're back. Can I be a proud dad for a second?
Better than being a proud boy. Yes, be a proud dad.
Yeah, oh my God, I didn't even think about that. Yeah. Shit, I better change the name of this whole — I mean, we did compare Kemba Walker to an insurrectionist. We didn't compare him. We called him an insurrectionist.
We're just putting it out there. It's the marketplace of ideas, okay? It's not there.
Yeah. Yeah. We're floating in that marketplace. Yeah. Proud. Nick Claxton. Okay, Nick Claxton only played 11 minutes, but he had 6 points, 5 rebounds, a block, and an assist. I thought he should have got more minutes in game one. I think pretty much like every Nets fan believes that Nick Claxton should play all 48.
Yeah.
He's the one guy on the team, besides Durant, that is effective at altering shots at the rim on a consistent basis. He's the only big man, besides Durant, that when he's around the basket, opposing players have to take notice, and they just don't feel that there's a free abandoned. There's just a free lane to the rim. I liked the 11 minutes I saw out of Nick Claxton. I almost wonder if Like, if Nash is withholding him to some degree, like, he has to, he's a better, I will go on the record and say this, Bri. I think he knows more basketball than me, Steve Nash. Okay. Do you agree or do you think that's, am I wrong? Do you think I should give myself more credit?
I'm open to anything. I'm open to anything.
Okay. Yeah. So I think Nash knows that Nick Claxton's really effective. There's probably a reason why we're not getting a ton of Nick Claxton. There has to be, because he is the best defender outside of Kevin Durant on the team in terms of talent. And we're not we only got 11 minutes from him in game one.
Yeah.
They could have used someone like him in parts of game one and they didn't go to him. There has to be something else there that I'm not seeing.
Do you think, we did a lot of Jeff Greening and Blake Griffining. That was the thing. And so for that, when I think about, okay, let's get in Steve Nash's brain, right? We're portaling in through the kaleidoscope. It's sunny, Santa Cruz, you know, we're getting, sorry. Anyways, what I'm trying to
keep going with it.
It's like I got hit with a palm tree.
We got an Americano. There's a little cinnamon in there.
A Niçoise salad somewhere. I don't know.
Perfect.
And what I'm trying to say is that why is he prioritizing that? And the common thing that they share is spacing, right? So is he thinking that Nick Claxton's utility is limited here because he's the only big on our team? Well, not the only, other than DeAndre Jordan, who is still heavy DNP life.
He's a sad dad right now.
He's a sad dad. What is it about the spacing that he's able to forego a little bit more of our – I don't think he respects Boston's offense enough to want to play Claxton. Like, I think he just thinks that, like, you can get most of what you get defensively against, like, you know, a lot of – it's Tatum who you're mostly concerned with. But, like, after that, it falls off pretty heavy. I mean, Kemba, obviously. And there's nothing frontline really to worry about there. So I think he's like, keep it spacey. And if it's really giving us a problem, like
– keep it spacey like Kevin, right?
Keep it spacey like Kevin. And if it's really giving us fits, then all right, we'll throw some Claxton at him. But, I kind of don't see it where that like super defensive need is coming from.
So this is an irresponsible thing for me to say. And I apologize. The Nets have only won one game. And a lot can happen. The Celtics could discover something in the film room that unlocks their offense and shuts down the Nets. And this series could be much more competitive than I think. But I'm going to say how I feel. Okay. What I would love to see, let's say the Nets win game two and then win game three. I actually want to see Claxton guard Jason Tatum for extended stretches just to see how that looks. Because now, Claxton is a big, and his role will always be to guard bigs. But when he was on Giannis in the Bucks game, Giannis had to recognize that Nick Claxton was on him. Because Claxton's athleticism, I'm not going to say it matches Giannis, but it's an approximation. And Jason Tatum, while not Giannis, very skilled, is long. Like, he looked, 6'9", maybe, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's probably not that much shorter than Giannis. More skilled than Giannis, less powerful. I want to see Nick Claxton deployed a little bit more on like the best wing player. Because if you can disrupt the wing on the other team, whether it's, I'm not going to say LeBron and Nick Claxton, but LeBron and Nick Claxton, Kawhi, if it's the Clippers, Giannis for the Bucks, Ben Simmons for the Sixers, or whoever else we want to say. I just want to see it, you know?
Yeah.
And you don't want to deploy that weapon in game two or three because, like, that's like a real experiment. You really should be experimenting in the playoffs.
Yeah.
A 3-0, up 3-0, game four, that's the experimentation zone. That's the safe space. That's the Moderna vaccine trials. You know what I'm saying? That's like, let's put the needle in some arms. Let's see what happens.
I'm interested in that thought. I think if I was really going to imagine it, because like here's how I see Claxton. I think Claxton's pretty deft at being a help defender. Like that's his real skill in this in defenses. Right place, right time. help defense. You switch him off in a guard, and he can do one possession of just about anybody. I do feel like if you were like tasking Nick Claxton with Tatum, like a dedicated six Tatum minutes, Tatum might roast him a little bit just because it's a size, speed, strength, kind of combo that Nick Claxton might not have the best answer for. But to your point, I'd be interested to see it. Maybe not in a playoff game, but I'm interested to maybe a regular season or preseason game, get some looks at that. I mean, the Giannis thing is going to be really interesting. If he gets real minutes against Giannis, I'll be very interested in like our long-term plan for Nick Claxton.
And on our YouTube, we're streaming this live on YouTube for the podcast audience who doesn't know. You can get in there, find the Glue Guys on YouTube, subscribe. You can follow us. Every time we go live, you're going to get a little notification. Our YouTube chat is discussing, you know, who's the best perimeter defender. Kevin Durant. Yeah, Kevin Durant is 100%. Like, Nick Claxton is technically not a perimeter defender. And I agree. And I'll get to Kevin Durant in a moment. I think I just like the idea of trying to figure out, because Nick Claxton had injuries this year, and I think he was in COVID protocol, right? And like, he was in and out of the lineup. I'm interested in still the experimentation in round one, because that's the only time you can experiment. Because in round two, it's going to be a 7-game series.
Yeah.
Most likely.
We're going right to Milwaukee. It's going to be.
Yeah. This isn't like round two Knicks Hawks.
Did you watch that first Heat game, though? Hectic.
The playoffs.
Yeah.
What?
Do you want to just quickly do this? Because, my gosh.
Yeah, let's do the bit. Oh, do the
playoffs. I don't have a bit. It's just me just, you know, gushing over. I mean, it's just so nice, obviously, to have the people back. But the games themselves have been truly a joy. This was sort of like the parody of like last summer that, like, for whatever reason, the bubble. I'll admit to like the bubble and just like life in general threw me off from like really loving playoff basketball in the way that I wanted to. And this is like the season. It's like it was delayed effect, but like this is what we all wanted. Like there's enough stars on every team that it's pretty unknown who's going to come out of it this year. And it's a real joy. It's a real joy. A lot of storylines hitting everywhere.
It's been sorry, my brother's texting me about. I'll tell you later.
lay it out. family drama. Let's go.
He listens to the body. He probably knows what he just texted me to.
Between you guys.
It's about one of his favorite writers is going somewhere else. Anyways. All right. Yeah. I forget, and I think the NBA forgets how great NBA playoff basketball is. And then when you get to the playoffs, like we've already seen, so the play-in was amazing, right? Like an unequivocal success. Lakers-Warriors was like the best-rated game in 3 years or something on ESPN. Immediately a story comes out that Adam Silver is going to push for the mid-season tournament because of how successful the play-in was. You go through this long season. It starts October, November. Guys are missing games. There's injuries. There's like these like Kings Pistons matchups that you're just like, what is happening right now? And then we're here at the playoffs. Fans are coinciding with fans being in the stands. Mm. It's a beautiful thing.
It's a little bit magical.
Like I was kind of one of those people who's like, oh, fans don't really matter. No, they matter. Like it.
Yeah.
Humans matter. I'll say that. It's nice to see humans around watching a game. Like that effect, having people in the stands, fantastic.
I'll say this, and it's going to make me, I mean, my butt hurt and animus is going to come out a little bit here, but I was, you know, the Spike Lee versus Mike Strahan energy levels it's a little bit unfortunate. I'm just synthesize it down to that. I would love to see a more animated version of. Who's our guy? Who's our baseline guy?
I mean, Ethan Hawke is a Nets fan.
Ethan Hawke is our baseline guy? Come on.
Well, Ethan
Hawke is a talented, poetic, quiet, introverted, creative young man. Middle-aged man. Old, elderly, I don't know how old it was. 60s, probably early 60s. Late 50s. But he's not Spike Lee stomping around on the sidelines like a toddler in a puddle, Mike. It's different.
Yeah.
It's a different vibe.
Yeah, so what do you do? So Jeffrey Wright is an actor, esteemed actor, has been in many great things. He loves the Nets. So it's like so Jeffrey Wright could firmly be in the Spike Lee seat for the Nets. I believe in his passion. I've seen him on Twitter. He shouts out, like, he's had many Alize Johnson tweets, and I think if you tweet about Alize Johnson, that's like if you're a Weezer fan, bring it up. I mean, I'm not a Weezer fan, and I don't know what the replicable album would be, but there's some album that Weezer's fans
it's Pinkerton.
Probably like.
It's Pinkerton.
Pinkerton, yeah. Sure. Yeah, whatever. Anyways.
Whatever, Weezer fans.
Whatever, yeah. Losers. Yeah. Anyways, there isn't a great, but there's no comparison for Spike, right? Like, I'll just be honest. There's no, the Lakers don't have a Spike Lee. Now, they have Jack, but Jack brings a totally different vibe. So for the Nets, maybe you don't even go with like the sort of the living embodiment of the excitement of the moment. You just go with like a real chill, you know, who's the most like relaxed? Maybe you go, who's like
the most relaxed? Like, wait, what?
Yeah, like you just bring a different vibe. Well, I mean, it's Jay-Z, obviously. Jay-Z. Why do Jay-Z doesn't count
No,
anymore.
I'm saying we want the opposite of relaxed. I want a...
I want relaxed.
Like a spastic person. I want a... I want, who's like, I don't know, the Chris Farley equivalent. I want a complete ham down there.
It was amazing. And one of my proud dad things is that the crowd at Barclays was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And it was great to... Like that energy, you actually felt that energy watching the game, and I'm sure inside the stadium, the arena was fantastic.
thank you. It's an arena, not a stadium. Please.
Yeah, I apologize. I'm going to do my proudest dad moment because there's really nothing to be sad about the game.
Oh.
Proudest moment. The biggest moment, I think, coming out of game one was Kevin Durant's physical aggression.
Wow.
In the game.
Yeah. How about that fall? Oh, my Lord.
Oh, my God.
He was so not hurt by that, and that looked so calamitous. Like, that was a terrible fall.
Where you were watching the game, did they have the announcer audio?
No. We had Darude Sandstorm for 5 hours. It was annoying.
That's one of the de Blasio's laws. He did universal pre-K and Darude Sandstorm must be played during sporting events if you're not at the sporting event.
That's what I was getting.
Thank you, de Blasio. So on the call, I forget who was doing the game, but like the announcer's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Durant is like, they in the moment were like, Durant is dead. Durant died.
It was like mankind getting thrown off Hell in the Cell. I was like, bow God. Oh, he's broken in half. Yeah.
And they were bringing that energy and they kept replaying it. And you saw his skinny body and his arm crumple behind him, and you're like, oh,
the crumple arm. Well, the thing is like when you are like a just a bag of bones like that, you know, you could take a big bump. You know, you can take that Hell in the Cell bump and and be fine, I guess. That is just rubber bones, you know.
But proudest dad moment, Kevin Durant's physical aggression. Took 12 free throws in the game, drawing fouls. He D'd up Jason Tatum. What I love about that is that that's a weapon that Nash can deploy, but it shouldn't use all that often, right? It's like in the playoffs in Major League Baseball, is having the starting pitcher, who's like your third best starter, come in as the relief pitcher, as the setup man, you know, come out of the bullpen, fire in fastballs, 3 Ks in the inning and leaves, right? Like that wears out your starting pitcher. It's an overuse you would never do in the regular season, but in the playoffs and when the games matter, you do that. Kevin Durant D'ing up the other team's best player, undoubtedly their best player, was a huge moment and it had a huge impact on the game. And Durant is already doing it. It's showing he's no longer contused or contused.
Yeah.
He is in it to win it. And Nash willing to let that happen, allowed KD, and while still on the other end being as dominant as he was on offense, pretty amazing, bro.
Yeah. I mean, meanwhile, Chris Paul like bumps into his own guy and has all kinds of, I mean.
That game was wild. I only saw the highlights of that one, but like fights and.
It was a good game. It was a really good game.
LeBron had a like, oh my God, his arm may be out of the socket.
And then was immediately fine. The problem with.
Typical.
Here's the thing. Typical. When you're selling an injury like that and you go like very specifically into something small, that's a bit much. I just feel like there's like an ethical almost thing going on there because like he's like, oh, like it seemed like his elbow had like hyperextended or something very specifically and then was like fine. But you could tell as part of he was like to borrow from wrestling, he was working an angle, right? It was a gimmick. Well,
and LeBron has a history of an injury pops up even post game. So like remember when he broke his hand or whatever it was at one point, and then he had a cast on it or a brace, and then the next game he was playing or what? It's like,
I just feel like
he has a history of playing up these injuries. In the playing game against the Warriors, he said he was seeing 3 rims.
I know.
But yet he comes out not having a face mask on or anything. Come on.
It's too much. I mean, it's just when you get down, you like, oh, my pinky. Ah. And then
Jordan would never do
too
that.
Specific.
Jordan would actually try to injure himself to make the game even for others.
You need to
others.
Pick something more nebulous, like I'm shaken up, the head shaken up, you know, that kind of thing.
So to me, Kevin Durant's It's a big deal. Like, he threw his body around, unfortunately, but he did. Yeah. He went to go to the line. He purposefully tried to get fouled to go to the line. He played defense on the other team's best player. To me, the comparison point is like when your son kicks a racist in the balls, you know? No greater moment.
Is that a
that's
thing
how
that's happened?
My kids just kick racists in the test.
What's going on in Maryland? Is this a problem?
I mean, it's a confluence of a lot of different things down here in Maryland. It's
sounds like a wild town. Yeah, okay.
Certainly very wild 6 months ago or however long ago it was.
All right.
Insurrectionists, yeah. Kemba Walker was down here.
Rabble rousing.
Havoc. That he,
yeah.
I mean, game one, again, we talked about this at the beginning. I think the distance between game one actually happening to now, I feel better and stronger about the Nets post that game than I did immediately following that game. The defense was there. Yeah, I think Kemba Walker is probably going to play better. But there were so many times that Tristan Thompson or Jabari Parker was guarding Kevin Durant or James Harden or Kyrie Irving that you're like,
it's a problem.
That's always going to be a problem
that's
for the
problem.
Other team.
That's a long time.
And
problem.
It's going to be a big problem for Brooke Lopez.
Ooh.
And the Bucks series, if that happens.
Exciting.
Nice. Do you have anything else on game one before I take a quick break?
Please.
Quick break, right back. A Billy King news item that I just have to share.
BK.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And we're back. So Billy King... this is from netsdaily.com that I'm seeing this aggregation. So my familiarity with the source material, I apologize, is not as strong as if we were quoting the Torah, you know?
Yes.
But anyway, so there's a book from Matt Sullivan called Can't Knock the Hustle, Inside the Season of Protest, Pandemic, and Progress with the Brooklyn Nets Superstars of Tomorrow, that seems like a great book.
Yeah.
Matt Sullivan had a series of tweets where he interviewed Billy King, former Nets general manager Billy King. And Billy King said to Mr. Sullivan, the Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Jason Terry trade was all about trying to get Kevin Durant, who was then with the Oklahoma City Thunder, to come to Brooklyn. And he said, this is what Mr. Sullivan said. The focus was Durant. It wasn't LeBron. It was do everything we can to put ourselves in position to get Durant, Billy King telling Sullivan. I was in a position where he saw me and knew, you just make sure that if you do everything right, that they take notice. And we had done a great job with the branding and opening. And if we can be a playoff team, we can get on national TV. And when it came time to get Durant in 2016, this is in 2016, we would be able to get that conversation. So there's a lot more to it. But what the basic core of it is Billy King saying that trade was all about, the Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce trade was all about convincing Durant to come in 2016. This is a beautiful 60, example of retconning history.
Full blown 60 chess right there. You never see it.
Now, I will give Billy King this bit of credit. Okay. Now, Billy came on our podcast. My stream is not really flying.
Keep going.
Billy King came on our podcast like 5 years ago where he was, in fact, we were the first, if we can consider ourselves this, the first bit of New York City media to get Billy King to come on and to talk about his time with the Nets. The thing about him is that he was honest with us at the time and basically was like, ownership anyone could say this. Ownership wanted us to do this deal, and I didn't want to do the deal to the level that it was. It was one thing to begin with, and then it became Pierce Garnett, Jason Terry, and it became all the pieces that it became, and it became all the draft picks it became. I do think, as damaging as that move was, like, there is some element of, like, hey, the Nets are trying, right? The Nets are trying to be bigger than they are, right? In that moment, that's what they were trying to do. But I think it's a little funny and silly for to try to claim credit for Kevin Durant's arrival in Brooklyn off of that trade. I don't know if that's a fair thing that we could be doing, Brian. Do you have anything to say? I know our internet's acting very split.
I literally think my wife just like reset the modem while we were live, which thanks everybody for bearing with that. Potentially, yeah. I don't know. I'll check in on that. But yeah, no, it's, I got nothing. That was great.
All right. Good. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you all for listening. We'll be back in your ears. We have a really fun bit later this week with a Nets super fan who's a big movies, I don't know, big movie fan too. No, he's professionally a movie critic. We're excited to unveil that next episode later this week. Nets are 1-0. They have one win, 15 more to go for their championship this season. Thank you so much, Brian.
Thanks, Mike. Really good stuff, buddy.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.